News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Nearly 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on your Tuesday morning. The storm is gone. I think Baldwin County got the last of it, and it was shaking houses back around 4 o'clock this morning. But it's gone now, and it looks like a long stretch of very nice weather.
Yeah, very warm weather, too.
Yep.
Dr. Bill said possibly 88 tomorrow. That's what he's seeing as the high. So we'll have several days here in the mid to upper 80s. Right now, though, it's Tuesday. That means it's time to talk with our usual Tuesday guest, Quinn Hillier. You can read his writing at the Washington Examiner and his own website, quinnhillier.com. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Quinn, I know you wanted to acknowledge the passing of Major General Gary Cooper this morning. He passed away over the weekend. What a sterling career and life and reputation he had.
Yes, indeed. And while, I think race is generally irrelevant, he was, the first black general in the U.S. Army or something?
He was, he was the first African-American Marine Corps officer. Yeah, to lead an infantry company into combat in Vietnam. He earned two Purple Hearts and a Bronze Star.
That's just fantastic. And then he came back and spent decades after he retired in Mobile doing good civic work. He was, active in civic affairs and consummate gentleman, stand-up guy, great life. My hat's off to him.
Yep, mine too.
Quinn, so we got several things to talk about this half hour. One thing, though, which you brought my attention to, Jerry Seinfeld, who I think he has a movie about the invention of Pop-Tarts coming out or something along those lines. But he's been making more and more media appearances, maybe because of that. And recently, I think it was an interview with the New Yorker Radio Hour. He was talking about why there aren't very many hilarious sitcoms like we've seen in years past. And he pretty much blamed woke culture, it looks like. And this is not just anyone's commentary, but Jerry Seinfeld's commentary.
Exactly. And look, let me jump back to the Pop-Tart thing in a minute, because that's actually pretty funny, too. But to the point, yeah, there was this article, and it said it's the extreme left that has ruined comedy. His own words, he said everybody has a little, now this is my paraphrasing, he said everybody has a little sensitivity antenna out, and you have to check this box and check that box. And then he said, and so for sitcoms, you have to run it through like five separate sets of, reviewers, meaning censors, because you just can't possibly offend anybody. And so by the time it gets through all of this process, it's not funny anymore. And he says what's funny is what one person or one or two people come up with that, that pushes the boundaries a little, but works on sort of common assumptions and maybe subtly makes fun of those common assumptions. And, and sometimes when you're doing that, people don't get the joke and they get offended, even though you're actually making fun of the people that are, say, the bigots rather than the people that they're bigoted toward.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, used to be able to know that you turned on the TV and you'd say, okay, I want to watch something funny tonight. What? Is it MASH? Is it Mary Tyler Moore? Is it Archie Bunker? Is it, is it Cheers? And he says, now you can't do that. And he's furious about it.
He doesn't take into account the fact that the TV watching is the habits are different now. You can choose what you want to watch. You have all these platforms and everything like that. But it comes down to the material itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where he's trying to make the point about the writing of the comedy and the acceptance of it as being okay.
Right. Yeah. And you look at the big networks, of course, ABC, NBC, CBS, where your sitcoms would traditionally be shown. And I think he's right in those instances where it has to go through so many checks and balances. Like if it wasn't just Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld writing what they wanted to write and then having the crew act that out, mm-hmm. It wouldn't be the Seinfeld that became so popular. I don't think there was much between them and their audience like there is now. But like you said, you know, so many people watch YouTube now, and there's a lot of very raunchy, certainly not politically correct sketch shows and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just coming through a different medium now.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's coming through a different medium, but, you know, I mean, in mainstream culture, you couldn't do Archie Bunker anymore because he, you know, does things like he calls his son-in-law Polak, and he's obviously a bigot, and the joke is supposed to be on Archie. I mean, it, you know, Norman Lear's whole point was to show that, you know, that bigotry is wrong. But today, if you say a word, like I just said, you know, if you say something in the course of satirizing it, well, that's supposedly too big an offense, and you can't do it. It's insane, and Seinfeld is right, but it's not just about comedy. I mean, I would like to broaden what Seinfeld said and to make the point that all of this woke, politically correct, whatever you want to call it, obsession with identity, with anything that somebody can take offense is, it's actually making culture more angry. You know, what it's doing is it's taking away, what do you call it, the steam lines, taking away the steam pipes where, you know, you can let off steam.
Yeah.
It's making everybody keep everything bottled up, and then rather than just sort of naturally letting off steam, everybody keeps some bottled up until it erupts, and it's just wrong.
But, you know, it may be what I'm consuming is more conservative, the things that I consume, the material that I consume, read, but there seems to be kind of a recession in some of this. There seems to be certainly a pushback to the how ridiculous all of this is. But again, that might just be the fact that what I'm watching, mm-hmm. reading, and hearing is more that side of the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm...
Remember we had the story not long ago that Hollywood... There's a lot of people that quietly or don't say anything at all because they just don't want to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much, Quinn, that the belief system is, this is what it is. People are recognizing this belief system and saying, that's BS.
Right.
But they're afraid to say it.
And they're seeing that they're not making money.
Right.
In a lot of these movies that they cast and shows.
Hollywood now, they're going to let the money direct them to what the material is going to be because, that's the other side. But Hollywood's now grumbling to itself like, this thing's not making any money. We've got to get back to the making of money.
Right.
What do you think about that, Quinn?
Well, if they would pay attention to the making of money, they'd stop being so woke. I mean,
right.
so maybe there's hope, and people like Seinfeld speaking up, I think, is a good thing. There have been a number of comedians in the last several years that have said the same thing, but Seinfeld, of course, has a huge audience.
It's
I
iconic,
do want to say this about the Pop-Tart movie. If you've ever gone to a Jerry Seinfeld, you know, a show.
Yeah.
We went once in Pensacola, and... He has this riff, and sometimes it's fun because I've heard it a second time. It wasn't as funny the second time, but he's got this riff on the miracle of Pop-Tarts. And it is, only Jerry Seinfeld could do this. It was one of the funniest things I and my wife had ever heard. And you'd think, what can be funny about Pop-Tarts? I was laughing so hard I almost fell out of my seat. So I don't know what this movie's going to be. You know, it's supposed to be a mock documentary, but taking off on the real founding of Pop-Tarts. But if it's anything like the riff that he had for years in his show, this could be really good stuff.
Yeah, and he was so he was in Mobile most recently in the area. He was in Mobile before COVID, and in typical Seinfeld manner. It wasn't Pop-Tarts. He went off for about 2.5-3 minutes on the Flex Seal guy, the guy that uses the Flex Seal to put tape on his boat, and then he rides around and Flex Seal, and he just it was pretty much an ode to the miracle of Flex Seal.
Yeah, so I get it. That's Seinfeld for
you. That's him, yeah.
You know, this all came after he was actually, I think, his vehicle hemmed in by protesters at one point when all of this began on college campuses not that long ago. Seinfeld also a victim. And as we talk about comedy, it's funny to me, and I'm sure a bunch of you out there, these protests in many ways are parodies of themselves. Like yesterday I saw a huge glittery sign. They had made the words with glitter and it said Gays for Gaza, with the G-A-Y-Z is how they speak. Gays for Gaza.
Unbelievable.
And just completely not a thought in the world for how they themselves, gay people, would be accepted in Gaza. But we've seen some ridiculousness these past few weeks,
goodness. Gwen. I mean, if you know anything about traditionalist hardline Islam, you know that they would be executed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, gays for executing other gays, that, you know, wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
Y'all heard me last week on the protesters. I'm glad to see people making arrests finally. I'm glad to see people suspending students. And you got to love what Ben Sasse, former senator from Nebraska, now president of the University of Florida, did. Right at the beginning of all this stuff, he put out a memo that said, these are the rules. Mm-hmm. We totally support free speech, but we don't support trespassing, we don't support threats, we don't support this, and these are the rules. And if you break the rules, you will be immediately suspended, and you may be subject to arrest.
How in the world was that common sense not present or hasn't been present in the elite schools who are tarnishing their own names now? Yale, Harvard, they're becoming punchlines when forever they were known as the best of the best, a place to get an education. And they're gonna have to at some point defend their own reputation through all this, don't you think, Quinn?
Well, yeah, and thank goodness the big donors are taking the money away, so that'll hurt them a little bit. And then it's going to be that there's a lot less demand to go there, so you know eventually they might start feeling the financial pinch, and it can't come soon enough. But meanwhile, colleges like University of Florida are doing the right thing. And you know what? When some students pushed it, immediately Florida did what Sasse said they would do, said it would do, the university would do. It suspended the students, and then it put out another statement and basically said, see, told you so.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, they led off with, this is not a daycare, which I thought was a great line. And then, you know, you have other colleges like USC that are canceling graduation, some that are canceling in-person classes. They let the protesters win. That's the exact opposite tack that they're taking at the University of Florida.
What cowards. I mean, pathetic cowards. And okay, so you know who's getting hurt is all of those other students,
sure.
The majority of students, by the way, still, who want to, after 4 years of this, they want their ceremony. They want to graduate. It's a big deal. It's a big ceremony. It's a big party. It's a big acknowledgement of what they've accomplished. And these juvenile delinquents are taking that away from them. The university has a right, and a not just a right, but a duty to stand up for all those other students and say, no, we're going to have the ceremony, and we're also going to have the National Guard there, and anybody that disrupts it, you're going to get arrested, you're going to get hauled off, and if we need to, we're going to use tear gas.
You know, it's amazing, because, too. A lot of those students graduated high school right around the time of COVID and didn't get a graduation ceremony then either.
Exactly. No, you've got to protect the innocent, and these college administrators are not doing that. Every single one of them who doesn't do it should be fired.
University Cal Poly Humboldt, I believe it is, they just shut the doors for the semester.
Folded up shop,
said we give. Amazing. Quinn, back in about 3 minutes, and we'll go over a few other things, okay?
Okay.
All right, Quinn Hillier from the Washington Examiner continues after this. We'll also get to your texts at 251-343-0106. Mobile Mornings rolls on.
Dan and Dalton at FM Talk 106.5. Quinn Hillier also with us this morning. I'm going to play this for you real quick here. Dalton and Quinn, this is Jerry Seinfeld trying to get to his car among protesters.
Free Palestine!
You support genocide!
Free Palestine!
He just returned from Israel. He supports getting to his car. Anyway, just wanted to throw that in there.
He was just thinking about Pop-Tarts, getting that movie made.
Right.
Right there.
Leave him alone.
Protesting. 826, continuing our conversation with Quinn Hillier. You can read his work at the Washington Examiner, also quinnhillier.com. And Quinn, while Trump is currently on trial in Manhattan on the business records charges, it's what the Supreme Court took a look at last week with arguments, and they've got until the end of June to come up with the next direction. But presidential immunity and the big role that that's playing and will play in future Trump trials.
Yes. Now, this is not the Stormy Daniels case. This is from the combined cases involving classified documents and also Trump's actions related to or leading up to the January 6th riot. And the question is, Trump's team claims the president has what they call total immunity for any act that basically can conceivably be called a presidential act. And the question is, he's going to lose on the total immunity thing.
Right.
But the at least three and maybe five or even six of the conservative justices seem to be, you know, leaning in favor of granting or recognizing a supposed, you know, very big grant of immunity, even if not total. And I wrote that, look, forget who it involves. Forget that it's Trump. Forget, you know, the immediate case. These conservative justices are going against conservative principles in their oral argument questioning because they kept saying, well, in this hypothetical, you know, what does this do to future presidents if, you know, one future president does this to another, then the other does this to the third one, and they started trying to figure out what the best policy is, and Neil Gorsuch even said, remember, we're writing a rule for the ages. Mm-hmm. And I said, wait a minute. When did conservatives worry about, say, that judges should be writing rules or judges should be trying to figure out the best policy? Judges are supposed to do one thing at the Supreme Court level. They're supposed to apply the Constitution and the law as already written, not to say what the law should be. And they're starting to act like liberals if they are worried about, well, what's the best result, what's the best consequence, rather than just saying, does the Constitution say anything about immunity or not?
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, then it's much tougher to say that any president, think Barack Obama, think Bill Clinton, you want to give them immunity? Where does the Constitution grant that? So I just urge a note of caution on these supposedly conservative justices.
Well, and also in those arguments, you know, people pointing back to W and Obama just as two more immediate circumstances where maybe they would have been tried afterwards for war crimes. And I know that was part of what the justices brought up in those hypotheticals also.
Yeah, and again, there are already checks and balances. We have more protections for criminal defendants, et cetera, than basically any country in the world already. And you know, there are some levels of immunity that came through British common law, but you got to have something that says this is rooted in history, tradition, and the Constitution.
Quinn, got to go. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
QuinnHillier.com and TheWashingtonExaminer.com. You can find his work there.
And coming up, we'll turn up your voice, 251-343-0106. A lot of suggestions for what to do if you're caught in a boring conversation and
really?
Trying to see your way out.
Okay.
We'll get into some of those, plus more commentary from the text line on the way on Mobile Mornings. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Coming to the text line here in a minute, 251-343-0106. This segment brought to you by Tobias and Comer Law, the local personal injury law firm. And you can vote for them in the nappies, which, by the way, nappies voting starts tomorrow. And Brian Comer up for Best Personal Injury Attorney in the Nappies, and Tobias and Comer Law up for Best Personal Injury Law Firm. Now, today is the final day of April, and April was Distracted Driving Awareness Month. I actually have this list of the top nine distractions that could cause a crash, and some of these not surprising. Number nine, pets. So they say restraining some dogs are a good idea. Messing with onboard systems is the number eight biggest distraction while you're driving, like the air conditioner or the radio. Eating and driving is number seven. Other passengers, of course, they can be distracting, especially for teen drivers. Reaching for stuff is number five. Abusing substances or lacking sleep, those count as distractions too. Number three is looking at stuff outside your vehicle, like billboards. Number two, most distracting things while driving, cell phones. And number one, they say, is daydreaming. A lot of people daydreaming out there. Those are some things to keep in mind for Distracted Driving Awareness Month, and they have all kinds of great information at TobiasComerLaw.com. You can also call for a free consultation at any time, 251-432-5001.
All right, we're going to do something that they do. We're going to steal something from the MLB Network. We're going to have a campus unrest whip around. So we're going to we're just going to update you on what's going on where. State troopers have closed in on anti-Israel protesters on the campus of UT Austin, leading to two arrests. Meanwhile, anti-Israel protesters on the campus of Columbia University have defied a deadline. I think it was two yesterday afternoon. Mm-hmm. That deadline to disband. Columbia activists defied that deadline with chants, clapping, and drumming from the encampment of more than 300 people. No officials appeared to enter the encampment, with at least 120 tents staying up as the deadline passed. This is New York Congressman Daniel Goldman.
There's no question that everyone has a right to free speech, but you do not have a right to make school unsafe for other students.
There's a new name here now, George Washington University. They draped
The flag,
the Palestinian flag over George Washington,
the president.
The statue of George Washington. At George Washington University, around 50 GWU students set up a tent encampment on the school's university yard last Thursday. Elise Stefanik accuses Columbia of surrendering to pro-Hamas anti-Semitic mob. As the deadline passed, she was not happy that the deadline was not adhered to. And she said, "The world is watching you as you continue to fail your Jewish students," she wrote on X. "Congress will continue to hold these failed institutions accountable." So there's a threat from Stefanik, of course, a Republican from the state of New York. Police have begun arresting anti-Israel protesters at Columbia after demonstrators defied that deadline. Authorities were seen dragging protesters out. Meanwhile, faculty were locking arms in an effort to prevent officers from entering the encampment.
Mm.
The Ivy League University had earlier in the day issued an ultimatum for students to get out by 2. This is a breaking news out of Chapel Hill, North Carolina. UNC police detained approximately 30 individuals who refused to leave the anti-Israel encampment at Polk Place after university officials warned protesters that they may face arrest and other consequences this morning. So, again, they put the warning out there. 30 individuals refused to leave. And they left anyway.
Yeah.
With law enforcement. In an update, UNC Chapel Hill said police calmly approached the protesters around 6 a.m. and detained those who refused to leave. The encampment was cleared under an hour later. That's the way you do it right there.
Yeah. And you said that was UNC taking care
Chapel
of business.
Hill, yeah.
Does it seem, and I haven't been following this, the headline.
That's our whip around, by the way.
Great job.
Thanks.
That was fantastic. I feel like I've seen it all. But this getting more press coverage than you would expect, these protests? I don't know. I mean, I feel like protests happen fairly often, especially at universities and some of those elite universities. But I don't remember this sort of condemnation during the Black Lives Matter protests. Mm-hmm. Maybe there were. I don't know. They seem to just be coming from the right, if anything.
Yeah.
Fox News may have been the only one. One America or Newsmax, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But with these protests, but it's also, they're not, acting like these rise to the level of January 6th. So the national media, they've put themselves in quite the predicament with the way they've covered things over the years. They were very, very easy on the BLM protests, mm-hmm. the Summer of Hate 2020, or whatever you want to call it. January 6th, remember, they set the mark that that's the worst thing of all time. Can't get worse than January 6th. Mm-hmm. So now they're clearly offended by these protests on college campuses, but they're not acting like it's an insurrection or anything like that. It's just the way they decide to cover things is interesting.
I think that they're getting confused themselves. They're not even sure exactly what to do. They're afraid to step in the wrong. I think that actually it's not clear cut to these networks and to these news directors. How do we deal with this? I don't think this is new territory. And what I'm saying is this is new territory, not that I don't think it is, but I don't think they've got their playbook. This wasn't in the playbook.
Right.
And what's really amazing too, ironic you could say, many of these campuses, you know, have this ideology that is more than seeped in over the last 40, 50 years or so. And I've been reading and listening to some of the explanations on how all that happened, as I know you have too.
Yeah.
And a lot of these educators are Jewish. And a lot of these educators lean way left.
Yeah.
And they were all down with whatever the protest was, most of them in the past. And now they themselves are being victimized by this. Again, it's like caught in your own trap.
Yeah, it's exactly what's happening to these professors and students, too.
Yeah.
And just the one professor who got all of the news headlines last week, and he became a darling of conservative media because he's a Jewish professor, and I can't remember if it was NYU or Columbia.
It was Columbia or NYU. You're right. One of the two.
He's a professor, and so the protests are happening, and they end up the school canceling his key card, right? And I guess it's because he spoke to the media that he didn't like the anti-Israel protests that were going on. But it took a very light dive. Mm-hmm. Like somebody just looked into his social media history, things he has said, Jewish professor who was kicked off campus. And yeah, 3 years ago, he had the BLM profile picture. He's talking about fighting the colonialists or, you know, whatever terminology is used. But now, they've turned on him. And when they talk about colonizers, they're talking about Israel.
Yep.
And it's time for you to go.
Yep.
And play the victim. So it's like, yeah, maybe you should have seen this coming years ago when anti-white sentiment was through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to know that they'd be coming for you at some point. But a lot of these people just completely lost. I have no idea.
A couple of things, I read that the Harvard, I think it's the faculty, less than 1% identify as conservative. Less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there is a DEI department at Harvard, and they really can't trace it back to how it began.
Yeah.
So you have this.
It just showed up one day.
It grew. So you've got to a DEI department at Harvard that they can't even figure out what was. They're sure it was a racial incident that sparked it to come to be, right? But they really can't identify exactly who started it or how. They were all in so quickly.
Yeah, just became
the whole mosh pit. Just said, yeah, we got to do this as a reaction to something that happened on campus, or maybe something that happened somewhere else.
Yep.
But now we're finding the DEI, you know, at its face value. There's a lot of pushback on that. There's mm-hmm. a lot of pushback on critical thinking, be it race or otherwise. And it was just swept in so quickly, nobody really identified it clearly or understood what the ramifications were going to be. And suddenly it was there. And now for a while it's been, you can't talk down on that. You cannot question that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why not? But again, you're in a very liberal campus and you're surrounded by so many that think one way. You even if there's got to be a silent minority out there that thinks one thing, but in an environment like that, they can't say it.
Right.
They cannot speak the words because they're going to lose friends, coworkers, and maybe their job.
Yeah, and you know, use whatever cliche you want, whether it's the frog in the water that mm-hmm. slowly gets hotter and hotter. Or You know, whatever that parable was. At first they came for the blah, blah, and I didn't care because it wasn't me. That's what's happening to a lot of these, if they want to call themselves centrists, that are on these college campuses. They were just fine as things were going, as long as, you know, things weren't pointed in their direction.
Right.
And now they're starting to see that. And Will says something that I've been thinking about, too. He says, the left eating their own. I love it. And that's exactly what's happening on these college campuses, especially the Columbias and, like, dance at Harvard, where less than 1% of the faculty would even consider themselves conservative. This is the left eating itself, and it's getting a whole lot of media attention. And I know Trump even yesterday said stop the protests, and someone said that was kind of an own goal, that Trump needs to have Biden own this, these protests on these campuses. But that's pretty much what it is. You're seeing the Civil War issue of the left, and whatever you thought it might have been, it ends up that Israel v. Palestine is the thing that's driving them apart more than anything else.
Yeah, so pretty amazing. And again, if you... One thing, very, I won't say it's fractured, but it's a scattered way to consume media now. It's not just one way. It's not just that thing sitting in the middle of your living room, right? You go online, you can find all kinds of opinions, and you can find a lot of people that maybe think more the way you do. So it's out there.
Yeah, there's echo chambers for sure. Philip says, oh, we were talking about getting out of a boring conversation and some techniques. Philip says, hey, buddy, I got to run, but I'll call you later. He said, I do that when Sean starts asking him for his fishing spots. He said, hey, I got to go. I'll get back to you.
He's talking about boring conversations with one of the most conversational people I know, Sean Sullivan.
Bonesaw, get ready. This is Bonesaw. He says, when a boring convo starts up, this sounds like something one of my children would do. He says, you look at the other person in the eyes and scream, and this is Bonesaw's words. He says, I have diarrhea. Yeah, that'll end a conversation quickly, but does sound like something. Oh, funny side note.
Bonesaw does have diarrhea.
Funny side note. We were driving somewhere this weekend, and my five-year-old goes, oh, look, it's a rainbow American flag. She sees the pride flag, a rainbow American flag. Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Wow, okay, cool. No other commentary there. It was just funny, rainbow American flag. This texter says, how about getting out of a boring conversation and using your cell phone? You need to make sure the ringer is off first. Good point, GC. Because if you act like you're on a call,
and then a call comes in, you're busted.
Yeah, you're caught.
Yeah, no, you got to put it on silent and then put it to your ear. Off you go.
Jason says, good morning, guys. The group Patriot Front has a sheet-sized banner hanging from an overpass on 65 North just before 43. Any info on them? It says no more foreign wars, and who could disagree with that? I don't know a lot about Patriot Front. I do know when AL.com has written about them, and I think others, they call them a far-right organization, whether they actually are or not. I'm not sure, but that's how they've been described. So that would be Patriot Front. I do know the Patriot Front stories I've seen, and they're usually out of Birmingham. It's like 18 to 20... men, I guess, that show up at their own little rallies. Their faces are generally covered every time. I'm not sure. Don't know a whole lot about Patriot Front, except for AL.com portrays them as the bad guys very often in their stories.
Yeah.
So that might be what that is. Mel Brooks wouldn't be able to make Blazing Saddles these days. No, I don't think he would. I don't think some Will Ferrell movies that are just 15 or 20 years old, I don't think he could make some of those today.
Yeah, that's a good point. You don't have to go back that far, really, when you look at some of the material in the movies and say, oh, that wouldn't go.
Even just Tropic Thunder, right, with Robert Downey Jr. doing the blackface in a very hilarious manner. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could make that today.
I doubt it.
Casey says, All in the Family, one of the greatest shows ever. Mr. Plot asks if Stormy will testify this morning. I don't know what the timeline is for the trial, who's coming up and speaking when. I think either Cohen or Stormy or both will testify this week, though.
We'll have that tomorrow in our Trump trial whip around.
Our Trump trial whip around.
We'll get to it then.
We'll do our text whip around. Finish that up when we get back. Mobile Mornings, 251-343-0106.
Also, we'll preview the Jeff Poor Show next on FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton, good to have you along. Happy Tuesday. Time to get real with Shannon Hesse tomorrow at 7:15 on Mobile Mornings. Look forward to that. Today on the Jeff Porch Show, you've got Trustful Tribune Scott Buttram at 9:35. Breitbart News, Frances Martell, one of our favorite guests. She'll be, she's the international editor of Breitbart.
And a foreign affairs expert.
Yes, she is, for sure. We love getting her on. ALGOP Chair John Wall, all things Republican Party in the state of Alabama at 11:35 on the Jeff Porch Show, which follows ours.
Looking through the texts, texter here says, Jimmy Carter did a lot of things wrong as president, but one thing he did right was during the Iran hostage situation. Students started protests at a college here, and Carter canceled all student visas and sent them back to Iran. Summerdale Tony says, he's very straightforward here. In a boring conversation, I usually just say, gotta go. Or I just walk off. That's all right. You've said enough words. I'm out.
Yeah.
Something like that. Michael says, radio guys play the bumper music when caught in a boring conversation. Maybe not often enough, but you'll be surprised sometimes when you need the bump to come in. It's nowhere ready. Being
Wait, exactly. The bumper close. Music is scheduled to, you know, it's going to start at 8:17, and you're in a boring conversation, and it's 8:09. Good luck.
Texter here says, I miss Don Rickles, and said, I want to know why they're not called pro-terrorist protests instead of anti-Israel protests. Another texter, most of these protesters have no idea of the history of Israel and that terrorism is the reason for this war. They don't know the history of their own country. Terry says, DEI, you mean didn't earn it. Said, when you watch the video of the protests, look for the people in the lime green ball caps. They are the protest organizers and legal advisors. And, you know, we were saying this at the beginning. Especially these elite universities get so much federal subsidies, which, of course, are taxpayer dollars that are passed down. And you get a lot of these. So that goes directly to the universities, which then create their own separate committees or NGOs, basically, that are anti-American at its core, a lot of them. But then you also have a lot of separate non-government organizations or quote-unquote nonprofits that work their way into the fold.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of these protests are federally subsidized when it's all said and done.
Federally funded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just it's incestuous, kind of. It's weird. Gardner says, how will this affect the Jewish vote for president? I don't know. And you look, a lot of the college protesters who are out there protesting Israel are Jewish themselves. And that's kind of a weird dynamic, too, mm-hmm. when they start talking about why they are anti-Israel.
Yeah.
Joel in Somerdale basically says the movie White Girls wouldn't be made these days. You know, White Girls with the Wayans brothers,
mm-hmm.
that movie. Yeah, no chance that would be made today. DEI came from universities seeking federal grants for research. They were required to fill out statements of diversity, equity, and inclusion in order to receive federal funds. They came directly from the government.
So the government started DEI or forced it upon universities.
In many ways,
okay.
They did, for sure. Alex says they wouldn't be able to...
How did the government start it all? I'd like to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
What agency, what bureaucrats sat in a room and came up with that?
Yeah. Alex says they wouldn't be able to make some of the Looney Tunes cartoons nowadays. Mr. Plot says, although it's obvious, a lot of my texts are just for fun, not for public consumption. Well, those are sometimes my favorite texts,
yeah.
The ones that we can't say on the air.
Yeah. Yeah, send them anywhere. That's we get a kick out of them. Jeff Porter on the way next. FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton. We'll see you in the morning beginning at 6 a.m.